Thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is the portion of the meeting where we read your questions. We have a whole bunch of them for the SEC. I'm going to do those first. And then we have a question. I've tried to categorize them into different areas so that you can get some coherent information. And if I could get a little light, that would be great. There's a lot of people in the audience whose handwriting is as bad as mine, and I don't think that I can... Thank you. Okay. The first two questions are directed to the SEC, and they involve basically what can the SEC do about the route. I'll read them both, and I'll answer them, okay? If and when the route for Northern Pass is not approved, what is Hydro-Quebec's plan B in terms of an alternate route? In addition, what is the process that the Site Evaluation Committee rules or considers on an alternate route if the route as proposed is not approved? Then there's a similar question that says, with respect to SEC process, is the committee's decision a yay or nay on the preferred route described in the application, or can modifications be made to the proposed route in the course of the proceeding? The answer is that the committee can put conditions on any certificate that it issues. Those conditions could be things, and I'm not saying that they will be, something like you must bury the line in a particular place. Those conditions could be you can't run your line through a certain area, so you have to find an alternate route. Things do change during the course of Site Evaluation Committee proceedings, and it is possible that alternates may be raised, alternate routes or alternate conditions may be raised during the course of the process. And the Site Evaluation Committee considers those things all as part of their overall consideration of all of the evidence in the case. So the answer is that to the extent there is evidence from which the Site Evaluation Committee can say, well, you need to move this over here, you need to bury it here, they're authorized to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that the committee has to act, that the applicant has to act on its certificate at that point, but the committee is authorized to make conditions. Okay, there's a lot of them on this one. Two former members of the Site Evaluation Committee, Tom Getz and Dana Bisbee, are now representing Northern Pass before the SEC. They both served on the SEC with present member Catherine Bailey, and Mr. Getz served also with present member Martin Honigberg. How is the public to maintain faith in the objectivity of the SEC given this situation? That's up to the public to determine how they're going to maintain their faith. The members of the committee are designated by statute. It's the legislature that creates the committee. It's the legislature that designates who serves on the committee. I'm not sure that this question is accurate with respect to who served with who, but I can tell you that just because somebody sat on a committee with somebody else doesn't mean that they're somehow can't make an objective decision. How long are Site Evaluation Committee members required to wait before they go to work for corporations they formally permitted? I'm not exactly sure. I know that RSA 21G applies to all executive branch commissioners and folks like that, and it requires a six-month wait before they can lobby either an administrative agency or the legislature for somebody who they formally came before them. And I think the next question is the same thing. How long are PUC members required to wait? I believe that same statute applies to PUC members as SEC members. How many Northern Pass representatives participated in the recent Site Evaluation Committee rules revision process? And the questioner has given me the answer. The answer is 9. They say Lee Carbonneau, Adam Gravel, Barry Needleman, Tom Getz, Lisa Shapiro, Dana Bisbee, Jacob Tynes, Terry DeWan, and Donald Funstein. And the next question, I guess, goes along with that premise. Since Northern Pass has at least 10 lawyers representing them before the Site Evaluation Committee, why do we, the public, not have 10 lawyers representing us? Well, You do have at least one lawyer representing you, and that's Peter Roth. And in this particular case, Mr. Roth has the benefit of the Primer Law Firm backing him up as well. So the public is represented. Now, as Peter said, he doesn't represent any individual person. Any individual person who wishes to participate in the site evaluation committee process is free to hire an attorney to represent them. If you intend to intervene, I highly recommend that you do that. And there's nothing that stops anybody from being represented by a lawyer before the committee. Peter, if you could give him the mic, please.
Just very quickly, I'm told by Eli that Primer has 50 lawyers. So that maybe, you know, on the other hand, you know, McLean has a whole bunch too. But one point on intervention that I wanted to make clear, and because I thought perhaps there was some ambiguity about it, was about how it was presented. And that is, while anybody who intervenes is entitled to present witnesses, either themselves or anybody else that they believe has competent evidence, and that could be an expert, you will have to pay for that witness and that expert testimony yourself. The statute provides that the counsel for the public can hire experts and have the applicant pay for them. It does not provide the same thing for everybody else. So your witnesses will be on your dime. And I just want to, in terms of my having witnesses and the Primer firm paid for by the applicant, I just wanted to point out or assure you that while they may object to a particular witness that I choose to hire, or they may object to the amount of money that they will be paid, they don't have any real say in who I pick or how much I think that they should be paid. Ultimately, that is a decision made by the committee. So if I file a motion that says I want to hire, you know, so-and-so as a visual impacts expert, and it's going to cost, you know, X thousand dollars, the applicant may very well object to that and have reasons for it. And I'll respond to that objection, but then the committee is going to make a decision on it. And so far, I've yet, in the years of doing this, I've yet to see any of those objections sustained. And usually, I get the people that I want, and I pay them what they ask for. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Were members, the next question is, were members of the subcommittee assigned to assessing the completeness of Northern Pass's application required to read the entire application? If not, how could they assess it without reading it? If so, how could they read it in the short time allowed them? Well, they take their job seriously, and they do their jobs. I didn't sit down with each member of the committee and watch them read it, but I can assure you that the members of our committee are very diligent. They take their responsibility seriously, and I don't see any reason to doubt that they read the application, know what's in it, know what the issues are, and are ready to listen to the rest of the evidence beyond the application and make a determination as required by the law. Are there members of the site evaluation, next question is, are there members of the site evaluation committee sitting on the Northern Pass subcommittee who are also on the PUC committee that is deciding whether Northern Pass has the right to rent the Eversource right-of-way acquired for the public good to Hydro-Quebec? I don't know the answer to that question. It's really a question about the PUC. I'm sorry, but I just don't know the answer to that. I assume the three PUC commissioners are ultimately responsible for any docket that is before them, so the answer is probably yes. And then there's a number of questions about the route, which we'll get to later. Next question is to me. Did you, Mr. Iacopino, work with Northern Pass representative Mr. Goetz when he was a member of the site evaluation committee? Were you counsel for the SEC when Mr. Goetz was a member? The answer to the question is yes. Let me explain to you how I am hired. I am hired on a case-by-case basis. I am not an employee of the state. I get hired when and if the site evaluation committee determines that they're going to hire counsel for any particular application. Yes, Mr. Goetz was the chairman of the committee, or vice chairman of the committee, because the PUC commissioner, PUC chairman, used to be vice chairman of the commission, on several cases that I was hired on to represent the committee. Understand, I don't make decisions. I make sure that the process goes smoothly as counsel. I give legal advice to the committee, but I don't make the ultimate decisions as to whether or not a certificate should be granted or denied. The next question is, did you, Mr. Iacopino, work with Northern Pass Representative Mr. Bisbee when he was a member of the Site Evaluation Committee? I don't recall Mr. Bisbee ever sitting on any Site Evaluation Committee dockets. Mr. Bisbee was the interim commissioner at the Department of Environmental Services for a period of time, but I'm not sure that there was anything pending before the Site Evaluation Committee when he was the acting commissioner. I could be wrong, but I tried to think of, I've never actually seen him sitting in that middle seat, so I'm not sure. But if there was a docket while Mr. Bisbee was the acting commissioner, I was most likely counsel for the committee during that period of time, because I believe that I've been counsel to the committee on every application since the Con Edison Newington power plant, which was first filed in 1998. The next question is for Mr. Goetz. In your bio for the Divine Millamette Law Firm, you stated, most recently I played a key role in efforts to revise the statutes and rules governing the siting of energy facilities in New Hampshire. Were you referring to the recent revision of the SEC rules in which you represented Northern Pass? If not, what are you referring to? And I mean, Mr. Goetz is not the applicant. He's under no obligation to answer that question. Okay, the rest of the questions on this sheet deal with the route and historic resources, so if we could put that there. The next question for the Site Evaluation Committee is, are there no Site Evaluation Committee members here? I do not believe there are any Site Evaluation Committee members here tonight, but as I explained to you earlier, the next five hearings will be joint public hearings where there will be at least a quorum of our committee at each one of those meetings. The difference is a little bit different. Those meetings are public hearings. They are for the committee to get information. The hearings that we're doing tonight and that we've done over the last four nights are for public information. Next question is addressed to me. Please explain the rules regarding contact with the members of the Site Evaluation Committee on this docket. Public servants working in the regulatory agents. What are lobbyists allowed to do? Is contact a matter of public record? Does the public have the same access to the permitting agencies and personnel that the applicant and its promoters have? I'm going to answer the first half of that question first. Nobody should be having what we call ex parte contact with members of the Site Evaluation Committee. What ex parte contact is contact about an application that is before the Site Evaluation Committee that is not in the presence of the full committee and any other parties such as public counsel. Ex parte communications with members of the Site Evaluation Committee are prohibited. Now, I will tell you that it is not unusual and it is understandable that we oftentimes get public comment that is directed to the email of a public official who sits on the Site Evaluation Committee. What we do in those cases is those members of the Site Evaluation Committee will immediately forward that information to Pam Monroe, and it will be logged in our public comment section of the docket. All adjudicative officials are subject to that ex parte rule, that they're not permitted to discuss the case in private with anybody else. Their discussions must occur in the course of the proceedings with all of the parties present. So lobbyists are not allowed to come up to, say, Chairman Honigberg and start lobbying him about how he should act on this particular thing. And if that were to occur, I am sure that he would tell them to leave. Same token, none of you should be walking up to Chairman Honigberg and telling him what you think or what he should do in this particular case. We have a process for that. And when you do it through our process, all of the committee members hear it, and all of the participants are aware of what your public comment is. So, and then the final part of that first half of the question, is contact a matter of public record? Yes, to the extent that it's in writing, we make it part of the public record. And then the second part of this question is, does the public have the same access to the permitting agencies and personnel that the applicants and its promoters have? I assume the questioner is discussing what we said before, things like pre-permitting meetings and things like that. And that's obviously subject to the resources of each individual permitting agency. I know that, for instance, at the Department of Environmental Services, if you had a question, say, about a wetlands application that's contained within a site evaluation application, if you called Tim Drew, who is their public information officer there, I know that he makes an effort to get information to folks. I believe that you probably do have some of the same access. I can't speak for every state agency. We have large state agencies like DES, and we also have very small state agencies like the Division of Historical Resources, which work on pretty much a skeleton crew. So I think it's somewhat dependent upon the individual agency. But they are your state agencies, and you should feel free to inquire of them to see if you can get information that you need. The next question, the Site Evaluation Committee denied a wind farm in Antrim, New Hampshire, because the enormous turbines would appear, quote, out of scale, close quote, and cause, quote, significant qualitative impacts, close quote. Does the SEC consider tall steel lattice towers above the trees in the Amonoosuc River Valley to be, quote, out of scale, close quote, and would such towers cause significant qualitative impact? Well, that's one of the decisions that the Site Evaluation Committee is required to make. They're required to consider whether it'll be an unreasonable adverse impact on aesthetics in this particular case. I can't tell you what each individual member of the Site Evaluation Committee will decide. That is their obligation to decide that, and they will do that after hearing all of the evidence in the case. Okay, this next question has a very long premise, and I'm going to summarize it because basically this question is to the SEC, but it's about property values, and the questioner has a very long premise indicating that there will be an impact on property values, which he calls undeniable and already evident. He says that sales have faltered, that losses in value for affected properties will be in the range of 50% to 70%. He says that it cannot be said that there's little or no effect, as Northern Pass is wont to say, for both logic and experience, even with minor degrees of degradation tell us otherwise. And it's simply a fact of life that you cannot place an ugly object on a beautiful landscape without reducing its value in the marketplace. The question that he has for the SEC is, how will Northern Pass compensate property owners? That's not really an SEC question, but the next one is, how does the SEC view property values lowered and devalued in their permitting process? If you recall, the very first slide that I put up set forth the purposes of the Site Evaluation Committee, and part of that purpose is to balance the benefits and impacts of a project on the welfare of the population, private property, and the economics of the state. So the Site Evaluation Committee will hear evidence about property values, will hear evidence about orderly development of the region and what impacts and what benefits any particular project before it might have, and they will make a determination after hearing that evidence. Once again, I can't tell you what they will decide because I'm not the person who decides that, but they will hear the evidence and make the decision based upon those criteria that I had laid out in the slides. Next question is, how many people on the Site Evaluation Committee live in the North Country? I don't know, because I don't know where each of them resides. I know that there's at least one member of the committee who lives north of the Notches anyway, but I'm not sure where everybody else on the committee physically lives. I know that most of them work in Concord. Next question is for the SEC. The Northern Pass proposes to bury part of its line on municipal roads in Stuartstown and Clarksville. Northern Pass has not formally petitioned either the Board of Selectmen, to acquire a license to use the right-of-way in the municipal roads. Why did the Site Evaluation Committee accept the Northern Pass application as complete without such documents? Does the SEC believe that RSA 162H trumps the statutory authority of these municipalities to issue such licenses? There's a case called Public Service versus Town of Hampton, which says that the Site Evaluation Committee does, in fact, have preempt the authority of local towns and cities in the installation of, in that particular case, it was an overhead transmission line that went from the Seabrook power plant to somewhere. I'm not sure where it went to. That case is old. It's in the early 80s, but that is, the statute envisions the preemptive authority of the committee, and the Supreme Court of the state has also interpreted the statute that way. I'm going to apologize to this questioner because I think they may have misunderstood something that I said. But this question is, if a power purchase agreement is required before an application is submitted, why did the SEC accept the application as complete when there is no PPA, as admitted by Mr. Quinlan last week in Londonderry? I think I know. There's a slide I put up that talked about the types of things that applicants do before they come in to the Site Evaluation Committee. We don't have a rule that says you have to have a PPA, but that is one of the very common things that is done. The purpose of that slide was to just discuss all the things that go on before we actually get the application at the Site Evaluation Committee. So if I led you to believe that a power purchase agreement is required, it's not. But of course, an applicant that comes in without a power purchase agreement still has to satisfy those criteria that are there, and that may be problematic. This next question is for the Site Evaluation Committee. As stated last week, the power lines cannot be placed under the interstate highway because the Department of Transportation did not see it as a necessity. New Hampshire outputs energy already. Why does New Hampshire have to take the blow for this project to feed the energy needs for the city folks? And I assume what the questioner is asking about is the fact that there's been suggestions that most of the power from this line will go to other places and not New Hampshire. That's a question that the Site Evaluation Committee will consider in its deliberations. I can't answer this question for you. That's one of the questions that go to the very heart of the things that the committee will consider. Is Northern Pass employee Mr. Varney a former SEC member? Yes, he is. Mr. Varney is the former commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services, and in that role sat as the chairman of the Site Evaluation Committee for a number of years. And just to expand, because I'm sure I'll get the question, yes, I did represent the committee at times when Mr. Varney was commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services and sat on the Site Evaluation Committee. So those are the questions that we had for the committee, I believe. Of course, there may be more that have come in since. Let me just get myself organized here because I've picked up too many papers. Those are done. Okay, the next group of questions that we're going to ask deal with burial, and these are obviously going to go to the applicant. First one, I intend to stand on my part of the road if you come down Route 116 intending to bury the line and will stop you from proceeding. I consider that I own the land under the road surface abutting my property up to the median. What are you going to do about it?
Haven't gotten that question before, but our hope and expectation is that you know, when we move into the construction phase, we have a project that New Hampshire will support, and we won't have to deal with that type of situation.